Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 68. My name is John Morgan. Fernanda Praches is sitting right here next to me for the third time in a row, I believe.
Fourth,
because we had a little and a half episode in there.
Yeah,
which is kind of what we're doing now. This is a little bit of a post-fight edition, even though it's a normal edition. That's that Wednesday night show.
True story.
So it's a real edition and a half.
And a half.
And you are 24 hours away from, actually, basically by the time most people be listening to this.
I'll be on my way home.
Back to Brazil. How's it been for you? A couple weeks in the United States?
It's been real. Nah, I love it here. I think everybody just knows that I love being in the U.S. and I love Diet Coke. So
the amount of Diet Coke that you have consumed is honestly like, it's impressive. I mean, as a connoisseur of fine frosty beverages as I am, and listen, I am a master of consumption, but when it comes to Diet Coke levels,
I'm the pound for pound best.
Pound for pound. King, queen? I have to say queen to not be sexist, right?
Another thing that you guys have here that we don't have in Brazil is the refills.
That's right. I never thought about that.
So Diet Coke refills alone would be enough reason for me to move.
Just the exchange rate on refills.
Dude, I would save so much money. And I'm like single-handedly moving your economy just buying so much Diet Coke as well. So I think it's a win-win situation for me to move to the U.S.
A hint to investors, if you ever hear that Fernanda has moved to the United States, buy stock in Coca-Cola like right away because like you're going to see a spike. I mean, there's going to be a noticeable spike.
See, we don't talk only about MMA.
No.
We talk about business.
We got it all.
Yeah, stuff. I don't even know. My brain hurts. It's been really, really long week. 2 weeks. Life.
A long 2 weeks. Okay, I should say we're still in Sioux Falls. We made a decision when we booked this trip a couple months out when you first got hired at MMA Junkie and decided to bring you in to International Fight Week. And while you're in the United States, we figured let's go cover this South Dakota card. Let's do it. You know, let's get one more experience. And then, fortunately, we did say, before we put you back on a plane, let's have one day to just chill and hang out for a little bit. Even though Sioux Falls might not be the most exciting place on the face of the planet, at least let's get you rested before you have to jump back on a plane because International Fight Week, as we discussed earlier, was exhausting. It was hell. It was fun, but it was hell.
Yes,
and it was a fun
hell. A memoir.
Yeah. It was fun. It was hell. It was my life. Sioux Falls, I will say, we have been here for like 4 days now. Home of literally the nicest people on the face of the planet.
Wow. I feel like as a person who lives in Rio, home to like the rudest people alive, I just feel like this could be like a hostile situation, you know, the movie.
This is like the anti-Rio.
Where people are like, you know, treating you very nicely so they can, like, take your kidneys or whatever and, like, torture you to death.
Right.
I'm still, like, half expecting that because people are so unbelievably nice that it's just, to me, in my carioca brain, because we're haters. We're, like,
sure.
Yeah, we're just us big city folk are pretty mean people. And I just hear with people being nice to me and, you know that movie / book, The Perks of Being a Wallflower?
Yes.
There's a line that goes, "We accept the love we think we deserve." Maybe I'm having a tough time accepting the love.
It's been crazy. I mean, I guess to put it in perspective to people, literally 5 minutes ago, because we went out this afternoon, we went to go see the Falls of Sioux Falls. And we went to have lunch, and you went to go do some shopping because things are cheaper here in the United States than they are in Brazil. And there's certain things that just aren't even available to you that you want to get. We came back, and your hotel room door
was open. Wide open.
It was propped open. You know, you put the little metal thing through there and whatever. Yep. But it's funny because normally, and I did have that moment. I did have that one moment like,
somebody
oh shit, we're going to go in there and everything is going to be gone. Because what are they going to take, though?
My dirty clothes? Oh, we have the equipment. Your computer's in there?
The camera's in there?
The lens of the camera?
We do travel with equipment. Granted, our own personal items are not very valuable, but the stuff that we travel with for MMA
Well,
Junkie,
my Kat Von D lipsticks, if you do the math, they're probably worth a small fortune at this point.
Totally. That's what I was most worried about was the Kat Von D lipsticks.
But yeah, it was open, and in true Fernanda form, I immediately assumed I fucked up and let the door open because that's how I do things in life. I do them wrong. So I just kind of, well, I failed at closing my own door. Let's add yet another one to my list of failures. But it wasn't me. The room had been clean, and somebody just left it open. And honestly, not for one second did I worry.
No, everything was there. Like, if anything, like, we probably should have opened up your computer to see if maybe somebody upgraded your RAM or, like, installed some new software for you. Because
it's bizarre. And it's funny because they have a really tough time, like, grasping the concept of a Brazilian here.
Yes, they do.
So everywhere we go, it's people will be like offering me some kind of like rewards card or something, and I'd be like, thank you, but you know, I'm from Brazil, so everybody, no mistake, Brazil. So what are you doing in Sioux Falls? Seriously, though? And I'm like, yeah,
well. I mean, this is not even a place Americans would go for the most part, but I'm gonna say, I'm gonna sign off on it. I don't know why anybody would want to come here, but if people have ever thought about Sioux Falls, I'm saying thumbs up. Go to Sioux Falls. It's nice. We've had
Okay, I don't want to be mean. I'm just saying, like, for me, it's great. It's better than Brazil.
Right.
I would move here in a heartbeat. Right. Fernanda, would you rather move to Rio or South Sioux Falls? Sioux Falls. I don't even.
Right.
I know I sound mean when I say that it's different because it is. Like, I'm used to, like, a very hectic environment. But I'm not saying it's better. I'm saying it's different.
It's different.
And yesterday I was on Luke Thomas's show.
Right.
And he asked, and he said, well, I actually never been to Sioux Falls. And I'm like, well, you're not missing out on much. But there's really nothing, I think, out of the ordinary, but at the same time it's pretty chill. The food has been great. The people have been super nice. The weather now is awesome.
Beautiful.
So, you know,
I just want to wipe that dirt off your shoulder that you had right there, which is just dropping those names. I
was on the Luke Thomas
show. I was just on the Luke Thomas. I've never been on the Luke Thomas show. I don't know how that goes.
I'm kind of a big deal.
You are kind of a big deal. All right.
You have to accept that.
You're either a big deal or horrible is basically what is basically what I'm gathering on social media, right?
Oh yeah. But yeah, the haters are there.
After 3 straight weeks on the MMA
Roadshow.
But
I only got one hater last week.
Right? So that's good. Less haters.
The guy who called me the drunk woman.
The drunk woman. Which you hadn't even been drinking.
I had like, seriously, one Bud Light.
Right.
And today, dear listeners, I've had zero alcohol ingested.
I can also say that I've had zero Bud Light. Oh, okay. No, I can't. I had 3 Bud Lights at lunch.
Oh.
Coors Lights now. I've had some frosty beverages.
Yeah, I'm drinking a Red Bull sugar-free. So if you guys think I suck, please don't give alcohol a bad rap. It's all on me.
It's just Fernanda.
It's not alcohol's fault. It's not, you know, the beer's fault. So let's all be fair here.
All right. Well, let's talk about what we saw last night. UFC Fight Night 91 is the reason we came to Sioux Falls, South Dakota. It was the end of a long journey for you. It's funny because, I mean, we did a post-fight show from here in Sioux Falls when we first got here. And, man, I think we were exhausted. And then this week, it was so weird because literally we were the only media that traveled. I mean, the MMA Junkie was the only media that traveled. And I don't mean that as an insult to any of the other mixed martial arts websites. I get it. You know, it is what it is. It was everybody was exhausted. This was a low profile event. But this was bizarre because, I mean, we were the only media here all week. The local news did come out, which was cool.
Yeah,
but they know nothing about mixed martial arts. They're learning about it, and they admitted that.
Yeah.
But it was weird. I wonder what you felt like because, you know, the events in Brazil, and you said it a couple times. And you're absolutely right. The Brazilian media has done a fantastic job. I mean, for all the shit that the Brazilian media has taken over the years, and I think they've progressed so quickly over the past couple of years, but, I mean, for all the shit that they've taken, they have supported the, you know, they have made sure to cover their sport. And here, that's not necessarily happening.
I would say adjusted.
Yeah.
Because it's just different. I think that for you guys, seeing the way that we cover sports, it's different. I'm not saying, you know, so that's like, when you say progress, I wouldn't say progress. I'd say we adjusted to the rules a little bit better, I guess.
I say progress because you got more like us, which is obviously better.
Oh, yeah. Well, the American white male thinking that he's the example that we should all follow.
I'm just saying.
But, yeah, usually in Brazil, we cover everything. It's always been like that. So, Jaraguá do Sul, as you know, I've been there three times, which is three times more than any person should ever go to Jaraguá do Sul.
Sioux Falls is the equivalent of Jaraguá do Sul.
Pretty much. Only, like, good.
Yeah, yeah. Fair point.
Only, like,
there
nice.
Is no Bar Stannis in Sioux Falls,
True
though.
Story. That pub was... I'm not going to say the shit because I'm trying to swear less.
But the expletive. The expletive in parentheses.
So I had never been ever in my life to such a media-free event. And on one hand, it's pretty great. Just because, you know, we had access to some pretty exclusive content, which is always nice. And we got to kind of like, you end up getting some perks just because you're the only ones who made the effort,
right.
You know? And like I said, I totally understand why, you know, there's no need, like, why an outlet would choose not to go. It's a small event after, like, a week that was insanely intense. And
it's not easy to get to Sioux Falls, South Dakota. I mean, yeah, there aren't direct flights from, I mean, you have to take connections.
Yeah, I totally get it. But it was interesting. It was a very interesting experience, especially when you take into consideration like the contrast between both weeks.
Well, I want to say this because I often get people that hit me up that are saying like, John, man, I'm up and coming. I want to do this journalism thing. I want to do MMA. What kind of advice would you give? And I mean, it's hard to give the entire gamut of advice or whatever, but I would say this: if you have an opportunity to come to small events like this, I'm not gonna lie, I think the opportunity to come to small events like this is better than going to a big event like UFC 200.
For sure, you're absolutely right. This is the way that you're gonna get content that's gonna resonate. You know, an example like yesterday. So we had that. We're gonna go into detail about it, but then a tweet of mine about Fanata just got so many RTs and likes and stuff, things that I'd never had on my Twitter because I don't have even that many followers, but just because it was exclusive content. When you're doing a week like UFC 200 and International Fight Week and whatnot, it's almost like you're trying to keep your head above water. The coverage is more about not falling behind than just getting spectacular
Not
things.
Losing to the other guy who
exactly.
You know that they're getting the same thing out.
Exactly.
Or, excuse me, the other person.
Exactly. So I totally agree with you. If you want to do something cool, if you want to actually get seen, I would say the best way is to actually go to the smaller events and try to come up with different angles and provide something that not everybody else is getting.
And there's other side benefits. Number one, you're going to build relationships with the fighters, with the camps, with everybody around there, because you're going to end up being in close proximity to them. Whereas like at UFC 200, you know, the media day, you're talking about dozens and dozens and dozens of cameras and reporters, and you don't get that really like one-on-one time. You know what I mean? Like here, you get that one-on-one time. And then there's just number two, the fact that, I mean, if you apply for UFC 200 as an up-and-coming, you know, media member, you're probably going to get turned down because basically the UFC uses metrics. They say, you know, what's your Alexa ranking? What's your web traffic ranking where you're working? And if you're a new person up and coming, you're going to get buried. Yeah. Here, I mean, literally, I think I was told I counted basically. It was like 11 or 12 credentialed media members total. I think there were 250 at UFC 200. Yeah. So think about that. You know, I mean, if you're number 251, you're not getting into USC 200. If you're number 251, you're VIP here in South Dakota. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. I just want to throw it out there because I get it. I think people that are trying to come up, you know, they think that, man, the way for me to get there is to cover the biggest event possible. And that's true, but you can't cover the biggest events. And if you can do things like this, I think it'll help you get your name known. I think it'll help you get practice. I think it'll help you develop relationships with the USC staff, yeah, with fighters, with all those things. So just something I wanted to throw out there for anybody that's ever thought about it and trying to make their way to the ranks. All right. UFC Fight 991 was the first time that you have set cage side for a fight for MMA Junkie. You have been in the press room for us. It's been just a couple of months now. Of course, you started basically with UFC 198, which was an insane event as well. You came to International Fight Week, was insane week, and this was a little bit more calm, and you actually set cage side for us. This was the first time as a journalist, as a reporter, that you have set cage side, done play-by-play, done all those things. Just wanted to ask because it's something that I do, obviously, week after week, time after time. But as long as you've been around mixed martial arts and all the different roles that you've had, this was the first time that you sat down at a reporter cage side. Was there anything you took away from being in that position for the very first time?
Yeah, when I was doing production for Combate and Sport TV, for the last fight, I was able to sneak out. Usually my work was pretty much done by then. And the reporter and I would sit down, like we had a special seat for the broadcasters, which is actually closer. It's glued to the octagon. And we were able to do that. And then the reporter would get the last fight of the night right as they come off the octagon, which is a broadcaster's,
yeah, right,
prerogative.
Yep.
And so I had that experience, but it was different because I was mostly just chilling and it's a completely different vibe. And then yesterday, and we were practicing a few different things, you just notice when you're paying attention to the noises, you know, and it's to the faces, it's totally different. You're looking for something entirely different. And one thing that I have a problem with, like in life, I have a very short attention span. I get distracted very easily. It's very hard for me to, like, to actually pay my undivided, to give my undivided attention to one single happening. So at home, I tend to get distracted, mm-hmm, watching it on television. If I'm not like actively pursuing that activity,
yeah,
I'll easily get distracted. But there, you can't. You're gripped to it. And as long as I resisted the urge to look to the screen, because it's something I'm so used to seeing it through the screen that that's where my eyes are automatically drawn.
And sometimes you have to, even cage side.
Sometimes you have to. They're in a weird position. They're behind a pillar or whatever. The ref is standing in front of them. Or you're trying to understand a weird sub.
Right.
But just having, honestly, just the sounds of the punches.
Yeah.
I was telling you, because sometimes you feel like they landed. And watching from home, it seems like, oh, this guy, like, got a bunch of punches. No, they didn't. You hear the noise. You see how the other guy reacted and just kind of like how it, you know, met their skin. And you kind of understand a little bit more about what's landing, what's not. And just having a different view. It was, you know, as we've talked on the podcast before, I've had various types of jobs in this for like 7 years. But it's funny how you keep discovering,
yeah,
new experiences, right? And this was a very, very cool one. I know that it's not going to be every time. I just got to the team. We have a line of people fighting for the prime spots.
Yeah.
I know that I'm going to have to hustle my way there a little bit, but it was very cool that I got to have that. I was energized. Instead of being drained and tired by the end of the evening, I was like super energized and just kind of like wanting more.
It's funny that you say that, because I guess I hadn't thought about that in a long time, but you're right. I think that is the biggest thing, that sitting cage side, that you feel and see differently. It's just the sound, like the impact of punches and kicks and whatever else, like the blows to the body. Like, you really feel what matters and what doesn't matter. You know, when I'm not traveling, like for instance next week in Chicago, I'll be at home watching on TV. It is weird. You see it and you're like, it looks like it lands. It's, I mean, and the USC does a great job of miking the cage and whatever
great.
Else.
It's just different.
Even
the ref positioning.
Yeah.
You see it differently. Like, you know, you kind of understand how he's going about it. And, you know, It's just a different experience that I enjoyed a lot. I hopefully I'll get to do it sometime soon. We have a Brazilian event coming up. Who knows?
Well, supposedly it's in Brazilia. I don't know why they're waiting.
I
So
said
damn.
Brazilian.
Oh, sorry. Oh, sorry about that. Not breaking news at all there. Not saying anything we're not supposed to say. Brasilia, September 24th. I don't know why the hell they won't just announce this damn event. It's going to happen. I've already booked my plane ticket, and I'll see you there, Brasilia. Okay. All right.
Oh, very subtle.
Totally subtle.
Very, so just duck it in there.
Speaking of people that can make noise with their punches, John Lineker, let's just start out the main event. Because I will say, I've set cage side for a lot of John Lineker's fights, and this dude, when he hits you, to the body especially, it's insane. And when he floored Michael McDonald right away, I mean, just the punches that he throws are devastating. It's so funny because the guy is tiny, man. He's like 5'3" tall, not even a big flyweight. Had to go to bantamweight because he just can't make weight. As far as I can tell, the only reason he can't make flyweight is because he eats pizza every day of his life.
He likes,
I mean,
food too much.
I mean, the dude likes pizza. But, you know, so I was kind of worried. When he moved to 135, I kind of thought of it as like, okay, you're basically admitting failure. You're basically admitting that you have no discipline because you're a flyweight. But all of a sudden, a win like this, and I know that you came in feeling like Lineker was a clear favorite and that McDonald had been out too long to be not relevant, but at least to be a guaranteed, a guaranteed commodity, let's say. Yeah. But this was the announcement that Lineker is a legitimate contender at 135.
We were talking about this. Even we talked with him about this. We point out the height disadvantage because it's clear he's short even for a flyweight. But then what he said is, well, now I get to go to like the waistline easier. My body shots land easier right now. So you get it and you saw it. And with McDonald, what you saw was he was the one coming in, obviously trying to close the distance. He does not want to be in McDonald's range. That was clearly his strategy from the go. So he would approach, land the shots, and McDonald would try to like counter with you know, crosses and stuff because he couldn't even land the straight ones. And he couldn't hit Lineker. So obviously range, he'll have to work always with the range, with the reach disadvantage, and have to kind of be sure to stay away of everybody else's range. But at the same time, he seems to know how to do it, and he seems to be comfortable with it. So, and last night, yeah, what we saw was just what we expect from Lineker, like some serious, serious power.
Well, we were talking about it as we were kind of hanging out today, and you're right. As we were kind of reliving those exchanges, because, I mean, they were so fast. They were so quick. As we were kind of reliving those exchanges through our head, the things that I thought that you said were so on point was that you're right. When McDonald was trying to swing back, number one, the punches were kind of going over Lineker's head because he's so damn short. And the other thing is, too, like even when they were in, it was almost like his forearm was what would have made contact if he'd hit anyway, not his hand, because he's throwing hooks. He can't throw straight punches because Lineker's already so far inside of him anyway. So it seems counterintuitive. Like, we always think about, you know, the longer guy having the advantage, but for whatever reason, just Lineker's aggression and his understanding of range, it doesn't seem to be hindering that bad at bantamweight. The thing that does scare me a little bit, though, is that I think that he's a legitimate contender. I think that he deserves any fight right now. You can make any fight you want at 135.
But what is he going to do with the guy who moves around a lot?
Cruz and Dillashaw.
Yeah.
Cruz and Dillashaw are so specific in the way that they do things that I don't know if Lineker can compete with them. And I don't know. I mean, it should be Cruz and Dillashaw next. That, so maybe he doesn't have to go through one of them to get to the other.
Yeah.
But either one of them concerns me with him.
He would have to rely on sheer power again. What is he going to do? McDonald is a more planted fighter. He said it himself that his style is a little bit more, he's not going to go jump around like TJ or Dominic. But he's going to have to just like, okay, let's go. Come in and try to do what he did with McDonald, with guys who are jumping around like crazy. I would favor both TJ and Dominic.
Me too.
just because I think they're too clever to accept getting closed in by Lineker and take the damage. And McDonald did take the damage. We kind of expected him to from the start. That's why everybody was super excited about the fight.
Because we thought they were just going to throw and start
If we thought, oh, McDonald's just going to like out-grapple him or whatever, like we wouldn't be as excited about the fight. And granted, he put on quite the fight, though. Like, he was wobbled, I think it was 3 times.
Yeah.
My count was he buckled to his knees, popped right back up, buckled to his knees again, popped back up.
He tried like hell.
Oh, and then in the third time, he looked alert and active, and he started trading with Lineker. And I think I had to rewatch it, because then I just watched it cage side. I didn't even watch the replays or anything. So I can't say for certain what happened, but from my recollection, it was that. And then he actually managed to land a few that didn't rock Lineker, but they hit the target. And then Lineker finished. He sealed the deal. And it's just power, man. It's bizarre. Lineker is one of those guys that they just have something in their hands that we're not.
It's special. I mean, you were talking about last week with Du Ho Choi, like a guy that's skinny. You know, it's not – whatever. It just seems to have some kind of dynamite, some kind of magic in their hands that, as you said – it doesn't seem like physics or something that can be taught, or so,
because
you know, we always hear it's weight distribution, wrist snap, and all this. But like some guys, it looks different,
math,
it sounds different.
Why doesn't everybody do it?
You know,
there's, you know, and obviously there's positioning, there's a counter. Lineker didn't knock his last opponent out. He only has he has 5 UFC knockouts, I think.
Right.
He didn't knock everyone out. But it's just. I can't really explain it. You know, when you talk about heavy hands, what is it? I don't know. It's insane. And it's sometimes you get those guys that they might even be limited in other areas, but this is such a weird factor that you have to count whenever you're planning your strategy against guys like this. And even when we're predicting, we might get like the most one-dimensional math fighter ever, and we always like, well, but if he lands that one punch, you know, we had an example last night with Boach.
Yep.
What could he do? Obviously, Saman has shown that his grappling is not the greatest, but I mean, I think from the start, we were all kind of like just counting on Boach's power to, if not to finish, but at least to set up the finish.
Right.
You know, and that's kind of like what we saw.
Lineker, as far as what's next, Aljamain Sterling, I think, called him out.
Yeah, Aljamain called him
out. I like that matchup, but Aljamain's coming off a loss.
Yeah.
Don't know if that works out. Caraway is looking a little higher up the ranks.
I love him against another, you know, we would love to see him against Thomas Almeida or...
I'd love that.
I think that would be a pretty cool fight.
That's a guy coming off a loss, too, but...
But he was 20-1,
dude. 20-1. That's pretty incredible. And you got Garbrandt and Mizugaki hooking up in a month. Maybe the winner of that fight, Garbrandt and Mizugaki, might make some sense. Yeah.
If it was Garbrandt, that would be awesome.
That'd be a great cool fight. Yeah. Uriah just got announced against Jimmy Rivera. Sun Sal's coming off a loss. He's higher ranked. It's interesting.
The division is like really.
It's fun right now.
A really cool place. Yeah.
It's fun right now. All right. Well, I did get a chance to speak briefly with John Lineker. Of course, Alex Davis, a good friend of the show, is a good friend of ours, was there to translate as well. And there was nobody else because there was no media. So we just got one-on-ones with everybody on the card. So while I re-up on a little frosty beverage here and make a quick body break, listen to John Lineker.
Chiclete, joga no fone.
Não é nem chiclete, não.
É chiclete, são quentes.
Mal saindo da luta e já tá comendo.
Show. All right, well, incredible performance, big win. Just give us an idea of how he feels right now.
Incrível, performance incrível, grande vitória. Como você está se sentindo agora?
Estou muito feliz por essa vitória, por poder estar fazendo jus aí onde me colocaram no main event. Espero ter agradado e bora para a próxima.
Really happy. I hope I justified being in the main event. And let's go to the next one.
a lot of people thought this was going to be a long, drawn-out, kind of back-and-forth fight. Instead, he got it done quickly. Did he think he was going to be able to get it finished in the first round, or was he expecting a war?
Muitas pessoas achavam que ia ser de ir e volta, ia ser uma luta longa, mas terminou rápido. Você achou que fosse assim?
É, minha estratégia toda eu fiz pensando em lutar um round após o outro, mas sempre com o objetivo de buscar um nocaute, então eu consegui encaixar minha mão e graças a Deus aí eu consegui finalizá-lo com um belo nocaute.
Yeah, my strategy was to go and come back, but I always look for the finish. I managed to put my hand on him and I managed to get the knockout.
He wobbled him a couple of times. How early did he feel? You know, when he dropped him, did he think the fight was over already, or did he see Michael coming back? How did he see it play out?
Você balançou algumas vezes. Você achou que ia voltar?
Então, quando eu percebi que ele sentiu minha mão, eu achei que a primeira vez que entrou em knockdown, ele já iria ficar ali, mas é um cara muito duro, tiro meu chapéu para ele, tá de parabéns. Ele levantou, voltou, mas eu percebi, não pude parar até finalizar.
I thought the first time I got him hurt that he was coming back, but he's a really tough guy and came back, and I knew I couldn't stop.
Can you explain why he thinks his power is translating to bantamweight? Usually when guys move up, they lose power, and it doesn't seem that's been the case.
Você consegue explicar por que nessa divisão o seu poder está transferindo? Geralmente quando os caras sobem de peso, não transfere esse peso nas mãos dele.
Então, na de baixo também, eu falavam que eu era o mão mais pesada que tinha, e no 61 com certeza aumentou pelo fato de eu estar mais forte, e com certeza aí eu vou derrubar muito mais corpos aí do que vocês pensam.
In the 125 division I was always the strongest hitter, and now I'm stronger in this division, and for sure I'm going to put a lot of other bodies out.
And he had a message for Dominic Cruz, I guess. Does he feel like that's a fight that he deserves right now, and how does he feel like he matches up with him?
Você teve uma mensagem para Dominic Cruz, acho que é uma luta que você merece agora, e como é que se sente ao lutar com ele?
Tô vindo de 4 vitórias consecutivas. Não sei se sou merecedor ainda, mas eu fiz 4 vitórias bem convincente aí, bem empolgante, e tô aqui para lutar, e o meu objetivo é ser campeão. Eu vou buscar o que é meu.
You know, I'm coming off 4 victories, so I'm not sure what the UFC has in store with me, but I'm coming for him, and I'm going to come for what's mine.
Welcome back to the MMA Bro Show. When John Lineker says he's going to rack up bodies, it's not quite as scary as like Rory McDonald, where you think it might be actual bodies. But it is menacing nonetheless, because that dude absolutely can rack up some bodies.
And he's so casual about it.
Yeah.
You've met him. He's such a nice guy. And we actually like hung out briefly with him and his wife.
Right.
Like, totally nice folk. Very simple, down to earth. He walked out to Christian music,
right,
like McDonald. Yep. Like, both Jesus-loving men who, like, you know, dropping bodies.
I mean, God's got to collect bodies somehow. So wow. We sent these two men. It's funny. John Lineker, the first time I met him was in Macau. It was his second UFC fight. Of course, Alex Davis has been a friend of mine for a long time, and was just actually going to meet Alex, and he happened to be hanging out with John Lineker.
Yeah.
And John Lineker, at that time, was like 3 days out from his fight, maybe 2 days out, and he was eating a pizza in the food court. Now, I will give him a pass, because in Macau, the food court is a little bit scary, because like you walk around, and there's like the food is not recognizable.
Yeah.
Like there's, you know, pheasants hanging from the neck with like feathers still on there. But Lineker,
sounds delightful.
Homeboy just loves some pizza.
He
loves some pizza.
He loves pizza.
And you know what? It was a bummer for me to see Michael McDonald lose. You just develop these connections to guys. I mean, it's not friendships per se. Like, I don't go hang out with these people. But I'll never forget Michael McDonald. I had a chance when I was calling Tachi Palace fights. I saw him fight a couple times as a teenager. And I'm like, holy shit, this dude is legit. And I believe he was going to fight Cole Escovedo at Tachi Palace fights, Lemoore, California, birthplace of the WEC. And I remember asking Reed Harris if he was going to Tachi Palace to go see the fight. And he was like, yeah, I'm going to see Cole Escovedo. And I remember clearly saying, you're going to watch the wrong guy. And it was
awesome.
Michael McDonald. And Michael McDonald knocked out Cole Escovedo. And I like Michael a lot, man. He's one of the humblest, coolest dudes. And it was hard to see him lose like that. That was one of those fights that, like, either guy just one pizza-loving Brazilian versus one Jesus loving knockout artist who makes incredible woodworking cutting boards.
And is very excited about it.
Very excited about it. All right, let's talk about the co-main event, because the co-main event, I think the co-main event for you and I, now it's funny because the co-main event was originally the main event. It was Tony Ferguson versus Michael Chiesa, another fight where I'm like, ah, I love both these guys. Like, I can't wait for this fight. Had so many great interactions with him over the years. Michael Chiesa, my broadcast partner at Venator in Milan, not that long ago, he got hurt and had to pull out of the fight. And I was like, gosh darn it, I'm so bummed. You know, that's gosh the fight I wanted darn to see. You know me.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Could you? I'm Brazilian. This is my second language. I need you to explain the.
Gosh darn it.
Gosh darn it.
You know,
write that
that's
one
the
down
type of language I use. It's don't use that around people around here. They're too nice here in Sioux Falls. That's what happened. Sioux Falls just happened to me. That's why I said, gosh darn it. He fell out of that fight. Landon Venata stepped
Lando.
Into. Excuse me.
Oh,
Landon took the fight.
Yeah.
He was Landon
but
at that
Lando
point.
Lando fought that fight.
Lando fought the fight. No, Landon Venata stepped in, and it was funny because this is one of those guys that, you know how it is. You hear camps say, like, this is my guy. You got to watch this guy. And I'd been hearing about this guy's name forever. But I'm like, all right, whatever. He's, you know, okay, that's your guy. I'll never forget John Kavanaugh, introducing me to Conor McGregor. He was like, this is the guy. And I'm like, I had seen him fight in Cage Warriors, and he definitely had some talent. But I'm like, yeah, okay.
He's the guy.
That's the guy. Yeah, fuck me. Sorry, John. I apologize. I should have listened to you. But the fight happened. We're like, ah, damn. I think we all had a lot of respect for both guys. First of all, for Landon Venata to step in and then to change his name on short notice to Lando Venata. You had to love that. You know what I mean? So you have to respect. Anybody that's willing to step in against Tony Ferguson, respect. Then Tony Ferguson, a guy that's on the cusp of a title shot, to take a UFC newcomer and say, yeah, I'll take that fight with literally zero to gain, everything to lose. And then so you're like, okay, cool. But at the same time, I think as we flew here, we were like, ah, whatever. And then we got to media day, and still Landon Venata at that point, basically, I think, captured my attention, I know, by just standing there. And I always say this, and I really mean it. You can tell when you look a human being in the eyes if they're saying something because they're trying to convince themselves.
Or because they really believe
it. Or they're saying something because they really believe it. And Landon Venata, even before he turned into Lando Venata, he believed it.
He was already Lando, though, in his social media.
Oh, he was?
He was.
Okay, well, Lando. Groovy Lando.
Groovy Lando.
Groovy Lando.
I totally agree with you, and I think we were both kind of just in awe of him after that scrum, and just seeing how much attention he got, and just some people just have that factor that make others drawn to them. You can't explain it, and I think it's something that Conor has and Ronda has. It's just the it factor. It's just sometimes the guy isn't even such a great interview, but you gravitate towards them, and I think that Lando sort of has that. You can't really put your finger on it, but when he speaks, you sort of want to listen. And I thought it could have been just because we were there and, you know, just where he just gave us good quotes. And
we're looking
just
for something to be interested in.
Yeah, exactly. Like we're looking for a storyline here that we can go by. But then just seeing online how it did well.
Did very good traffic for it.
Yeah, it got like very got many shares, I think. And then the tweet, and then just seeing people, you know, it's just something that you kind of wonder if he's gonna. I hope he can keep it up, because he can just might as well go in there for his second fight. Yep. And just look like trash, and nobody's gonna care about him
anymore. It can happen.
But
UFC.
So he did that. He talked his little trash and stuff, and we understand why he needs to sell it. And then he goes and puts on the performance that he did against Tony Ferguson, who was
Beast.
Preparing for Michael Chiesa. And Ferguson, on that insane winning streak, for sure one of the most dangerous guys in the stacked division, because the lightweights are no joke. They're probably, I don't know, my favorites, but like I'd say lightweights and welterweights right now.
Absolutely.
And bantams, though, they're getting
there. Bantams getting excited right now.
So, but they're just so exciting to watch, and they're so stacked. We are having that. We even have like trouble determining who should be the next challenger. And so this guy comes out of nowhere with 8 pro fights and fights Tony Ferguson in the co-main event for his UFC debut, and he looks the way that he did.
You were cage side. I was actually in the back. It was funny because I was in the back with Tim Boach at the time. Tim Boach in his camp. Of course, you mentioned earlier Tim Boach had beat Josh Simon earlier in the night. And we were all glued to the television. You know, normally cage side is my home. You were the one that got to sit there for that insanity. What was the feeling like? Because
I could barely process it because it was so fast-paced.
Yes, and Tony was
changing.
Hurt.
Yeah.
Hurt.
Tony would drop and then get back and then look wobbled and then wobble Vanata. And you just kind of like dissociate yourself from the situation at some point. I was just kind of like trying to keep up because it was just so fast and so many things going on. And you're sort of like in disbelief because as much as you always like you give the underdog a chance in your head, for that one, it seemed like there was no way this guy's going to beat Tony Ferguson. And a few times, you just kind of thought, he's going to beat Tony Ferguson.
I did wonder
if he's actually going to do it.
I did. I definitely thought. I was like, oh, my God, this is happening. We're watching this happen. I can't believe this. I do wonder, honestly, if Tony Ferguson's style actually helped him survive a little bit, both in his own way and in the referee's eyes as well, because for Tony Ferguson to, like, move weird and wobble and to roll.
Yeah, you don't know if he's actually wobbled.
You can't tell. Yeah. You're like, is he actually hurt or is he, like, done? Or And I kind of wonder if maybe that helped him survive a little bit. Not that Lando had him done, but it was just so close. But, I mean, this to me, and you know, always right after it, you know, your adrenaline's high and all these things. But, I mean, we've had a couple hours. We had lunch. You know, this is not a and-a-half show. We had a little bit of time. This, to me, is literally one of those fights where if somebody's never seen MMA before, you can be like, watch this. I promise you.
You understand why we like this so much.
Watch this fight.
I know it looks weird.
Yeah.
But just give it a shot.
Right? I mean, this is
so
one of the
cool
fight of the month candidates, even on a stacked week or whatever. I mean, this was amazing.
Yeah, I think like everybody just praises Lando for taking the opportunity and stuff, but I think Ferguson deserves praise too. It's not just guts. Obviously, there's money, there's the fact that they prepare, they are not just going to give up a purse because the guy that they're fighting is not what they expected. But I feel so much for the guys who take those fights because you're preparing for a fight that might get you a title shot, and then you get a guy that, like you said, he will, if you lose, it's tragic, and if you win, you know, what happens? Clearly, we saw an awesome fight. We saw resilience, but at the same time, we saw Ferguson getting rocked by a newcomer. And, you know, he's probably going to get the title shot. We were talking about it. You have Khabib
That's the question.
It's hard because it wasn't Khabib's fault that he was out. He was injured. But then at the same time, Ferguson was putting in work in that time. Khabib, undefeated, total beast. He also had a similar situation in which he had to fight
Horcher. He fought the no-name.
An unknown name. So you kind of see both of them having to go through that situation, but it's to me it probably sucks, you know, a little bit. And the same we had with Musashi and Thiago Santos, for instance. You're getting prepared to fight a guy, though Derek Brunson is not, you know, not necessarily a contender yet, but you're getting ready to fight a guy that might just mean a step forward, and then you're like, okay, no, I'm fighting for a purse.
Right.
And people say, well, money, and he got the bonus and stuff, but you know, it's 50K, and if you're the champ and if you're fighting for a championship belt, I'm thinking you're going to get a lot more money than
Absolutely.
That. So
a title fight's a $1 million fight.
It's not just – I think people sometimes think it's just pride that the person just wants to be champion because it's cool to have a belt. I'm sure there's pride involved. Whenever you're doing individual sports, it's basically vanity. It's your own limits and your own. It's about you.
Of course.
Doing your best.
But if you made the same to be ranked number 50 as you did to be ranked number 1, I don't know that people would be working that hard to be number one.
It's you know, it's just all of that. And, but there's money. There's a lot of money to be made.
Absolutely.
From that position. So hats off to Ferguson. You know, I think he took the fight. He kind of like got outshone a little bit. So I think he, I don't know, I became a fan. I wasn't before this week. I was indifferent to
right.
Tony Ferguson's existence. And now I just think he's a pretty cool dude. And
had his kid at the weigh-ins. Or
oh,
not the weigh-ins, the workouts.
Awesome.
Everything was cool. And his workout was awesome. I guess it should be said, I mean, let's be honest, the media contingent was so thin that by the time Tony Ferguson came
everybody
around,
had left. It was,
it was
just
literally
us.
Just us.
And
we told the USC staff, like, listen, it's just us.
He doesn't have to work out for us.
Like, we're not – it's cool. And he wanted to come in and get a workout anyway. And so he came in and put on this, like, break dance. Half break dance, half workout. It was awesome. Then, of course, he had his baby there as well, which is always cool. You know, to see that bond between a father and his child is beautiful. And as you said, laid it on the line. The dude's legit, man. I think he's become must-watch. To me, anytime this guy's in the cage, I want to watch because going to be exciting. It's going to be exciting. And his career record, it's incredible now. The guy's USC record, it's incredible. He's a legitimate contender. So here's the question. I know you're a Khabib Nurmagomedov fan. I know you like his style. I know you believe in him. You buy into him. Eddie Alvarez is the champion right now. Is it Khabib or is it Tony Ferguson?
I don't know.
It's tough.
It's really tough. That's the thing. You kind of – it becomes subjective and it becomes about timing and it becomes about all these things. Sometimes it's like a weird like coincidence will make a difference when it comes to picking that one fight. I don't even know. Honestly, we were talking about this before, and I right now I would say Ferguson.
Yeah, but it's weird because we're just after the fight, so we're on that high of the Ferguson fight.
Yeah, but I would say Ferguson, but then, you know, Khabib's been working his way up there for a while now as well.
Undefeated.
He was out because of injuries, you know.
Injuries happen.
Yeah. So I don't know. I would say Ferguson right now, but I don't know. It's a tough one.
It's a tough. I think right now I'm leaning towards Ferguson as well. If they come in and Joe Silva says it's Nurmagomedov instead, I don't know that I can hate on that. The guy's undefeated. He's right there. You know, in the latest rankings, he's ranked number 2 in the MMA Junkie USA Today Sports rankings. So can't hate on that. But, man, Ferguson took this fight. I don't know. I feel like he deserves it right now. And I got to say, I'll be watching Lando Venata moving forward. I think not only is his game fun, I like the fact that he admits I got cocky. My own ego cost me. I mean, he's just dead honest about everything. He's got
very critical of himself.
Yes, and you said it right away. He's got that X factor. You know what I mean? Yeah. That thing that you can't describe it. I mean, it's hard to say that anybody is Conor McGregor, is Ronda Rousey. I mean, these are next level people.
But
he's got something.
Somewhere.
He's got that something where you're like,
maybe
I care. I want to watch this guy. So, man, it's just this fight was everything and more. If you didn't see it, well, first of all, if you're listening to this, you definitely saw it. You're not a chump like that. But if you didn't see it, mom, you should definitely go see this. Let's listen to both of them. Since this was not a press conference that everybody has streamed, because there was no press conference, because there was no press, it was just us. And the world can thank me for asking for Lando Venata.
True
story. I don't ask for much credit, but I was like, this guy deserves an interview. I want to speak to him. Please, USC PR, will you get him for me? And they were like, dude, he might have to go to the hospital. I'm like, I get it, but if he doesn't go to the hospital, can we get him? And
he showed up with
in a purple suit
that matched his face. That was so great. There was so, and everybody, I got hit up on Twitter a lot with that, and everybody just said the same thing. Oh my God, his bruises match. It was a purple suit with a matching purple dress shirt under it. Is that how you guys call it?
Dress shirt.
And the face.
And the purple face.
It was just, it was too great to watch, and It was a pretty cool experience.
It was good. Lando Venata is a hit to me. He made $50,000 along with Tony Ferguson for the fight of the night. They definitely deserved it. So let's listen to the winner, Tony Ferguson, and then let's listen to, I don't want to say the loser, the non-winner.
The runner-up.
The runner-up. The runner-up, Lando Venata.
Who wants to go home unmarked? Seriously. That was fucking fun. What are we in? 1 month, seven? Yeah? Man, I missed that Khabib fight. That made up for it. That was good.
You good?
Yep.
All right, man. Well, obviously, incredible fight. Man, just react. How are you feeling right now?
I feel good. I'm just glad to be back into the mix. Short notice fighter, came in tough as nails. Took a couple good shots, but I battled through it, and I fought my fight.
He came in with nothing to lose, obviously. I got to think you take your hat off to him for what he did. I mean, did he surprise you? What was that like being in there with a guy that was obviously, ready to give you a fight?
They're not going to pull in just any average Joe to come and fight me. I mean, the guy was 8-0. You really didn't have too much film on him. He didn't fight for 2 years. He's been in the works with Six Gun Gibson and Winklejohn and Mike and training with Cowboy and Dodson. I mean, you could throw all these names out there, but the kid was tough as nails. He came in on short notice, but he came in and he told me I was predictable. He can't predict that the Darce was going to choke him out. That's what I already predicted that was going to happen. And so, like I said, hats off to Lando. We got to promote this fight, and the fans got exactly what they wanted, and hopefully Sioux Falls will have us back here soon.
What do you think about the lightweight title picture? I mean, you're certainly right there. I know that had this been, a bigger name opponent, it would be almost a guarantee, but, I mean, do you think your willingness to face anybody and to put on that type of performance, do you think that should be enough to get you in that title shot?
Oh, of course, man. I've said it before that any fight that I go out there and I finish and I come in with style and I go in there with a purpose to get that title. These guys that are ahead of me, they're going to have to face me one way or another. And it's kind of like one of those, you just keep notching them off at one belt at a time. And they're either going to have to jump ship, go up a weight class, go down a weight class, or they're going to have to sign on the dotted line and face me. And pretty soon, they're going to have no choice.
Khabib Nurmagomedov's out there. He's saying that, he deserves that title shot next. What do you think about his resume? And do you think that he should maybe get that shot over you?
I think I have a better chance of filing for Social Security before he comes back and fighting, man, because that dude just goes and fights and he takes some time off. This dude, I don't know what his issue is, but I'm here, I'm ready, and I take on all comers, and including new guys like Lando Venata. But Khabib Nurmagomedov, you're not going anywhere, bro, and I'm a better wrestler than you. And if wrestling was easy, it would be called Sambo.
And what about Eddie Alvarez? And obviously we saw him with an impressive performance. How do you think you match up with him if that's the fight you get?
Eddie Alvarez, I said it before, he's a sandbagging SOB, except for his last fight. He came out throwing some fireworks. I think I'm right up there with all the contenders here in the top five, top three. I'm still top three. I don't think this last fight is going to do anything for my placement, but it wasn't purpose for that. My shelf life is to go in there and fight. I'm a fighter. I'm a professional fighter, and I present everything that I've worked on inside, that I have inside that practice room to go out there in that octagon. Words can't express how I feel when I get out there. Win or lose, I try to leave it out there, and no matter who signs on that dotted line, I try to just go out there, do my best, and come back here and say hi to my wife and my son, and just move forward.
And you came in saying that was fun. I mean, that was a war. I know that the best way is just get in there, get out quick, and get it done, but you enjoyed it.
I enjoy fights like that. I think the crowd likes fights like that, and I think all my fans that are my true fans like the fights that I have like that. I mean, you give one, take two, you take two, you give one a couple, and with Lando Venata, I knew we were going to have a stand-up battle. I almost wanted to point down to the ground and say, let's just go toe-to-toe. And, we'll give that performance. We'll see what happens. But I think that Sioux Falls, they got exactly what they wanted. They got their money's worth. And there wasn't a bad seat in the house tonight, you saw my fight.
Sorry, first time USC came to Sioux Falls. What are your thoughts on the Premier Center? What are your thoughts on, how do you think Sioux Falls did hosting?
Sioux Falls is amazing. I think it was a great place. The Denny Sanford Arena being close to the hotel made it very, very hospitable. Everybody that was out here was great. The area reminded me back home in Michigan. Hopefully soon we can see one of these fights out there in Grand Rapids or Detroit, man. I would love to have it out there in the Mitten and come back out there and do what I do best, and that's come out victorious.
Yeah, the sport was just sanctioned a year ago, so it's new for fans out here. Do you feel like the fans got into it? What was the fan experience like for you compared to fought all around the world.
It was like a monster truck rally, man. Everybody was sitting there just yelling, hooting, and hollering. They didn't know what was going on. Punches were flying, blood was flaring, and noses were being broken, man. It's exactly what you want to see, and you want the crowd to see that and react to it. Everybody was on their feet as soon as the fight got done. I don't think there was one bored person out there the whole night.
All right, Landon. Well, you know, at the end of the day, I know you would prefer to walk away with a victory, but it was a hell of a fight, man. How are you feeling right now?
I feel good right now. I'm a little upset with my performance. I let my emotions get the better of me, but I feel all right.
When you say you let your emotions get the better of you, how so?
In the first round, I was clear-headed, and I was executing my game plan. I was moving well. Second round, I started pushing him back a little bit and getting the control of the pace, and I'm gonna let my ego get in the way, and I got a little caught up in the brawl, and I started eating punches, walking forward, my hands down, not moving my head, not moving my feet, and I paid the price for it.
It's that's great analysis. I mean, I guess what a lot of people saw is that maybe you just got a little cocky. So I mean, is there just a feeling of regret right now that you let one slip away?
Yeah, absolutely. What it is, it's just I feel like I definitely regret what I did, and just things to learn from it.
That said, I mean, coming in, we said right away it was an impossible task. You certainly didn't see it as impossible, but I think most people did. I mean, the type of fight that you had in there tonight, I mean, that's epic stuff.
Yeah.
Take any victory from that?
To fight the number three guy on 2 weeks' notice and drop him a couple times and do as well as I did, yeah, there's a little more victory in there. But still upset. I think I should have done a lot better.
I guess maybe what some people probably don't know is you're naturally a featherweight. So
no.
Can you be a featherweight moving forward? Or?
No, but I hit 146 and a half once and almost died, so I'm done with featherweight.
Okay, yeah. So lightweight will be the future.
Lightweight forever.
The good news is, as I'm sure you are, hopefully you know by now, is you did catch $50,000 for Friday night.
Yeah.
Talk about the immediate plans for that, and if that helps the sting a little bit.
Yeah, it definitely made things a little bit better. I'm going to get myself my first car. Then I'm going to pay my own money, so that's going to be nice. Get my coaches a little bonus, too, and take care of my people.
So you never had a car before?
I've had a car. My parents paid for it. So, I've been a few years without a car, though, since I moved out to Albuquerque on my own. And I'm just grinding away. But go get myself a nice little four-wheel now.
Obviously, it was a physically taxing fight. So, but what's the plan for you? I mean, is it some time off? Do you want to go back? What's the plan?
No, I'll take a few weeks off. I feel like everything I did wrong tonight was mostly emotional, and just got to go in there and work on my mindset for my next fight and calm down a little.
What do you do going forward? Because, I mean, like you said, you fought in the very elite of the division, but, I mean, you should have been on a much slower pace. Your next time out, are you looking for another one of those top contenders? Or do you feel like, okay, hold on, let's go back to where I was and try to ease the way up?
Yeah, I like fighting tough guys, so I'll fight anybody. I don't care. We'll go home and discuss it with the coaches and see what we're going to do.
I know it's still fresh, but have you had a chance to, because I'm seeing social media blow up and that sort of thing. Have you had a chance to check your Twitter, your text messages, anything like that? Have you gotten some support?
Not yet. I haven't even looked at my phone yet. That's going to be, I'm going to put that off for a little while because it's going to be blown up.
What will we see the next time you're in the UFC cage?
Probably some better performances, good movement, slick knockout.
Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. Tony Ferguson, Lando Venata, hell of a fight at UFC Fight Night 91. John Morgan, Fernanda Prachas, before she heads back to Brazil. Okay, let's talk quickly. Daniel Omelianchuk defeated Alexei Oleinik. That's enough about that fight.
Wow.
I hate that. You know me. I'm a nice guy. I've had a couple frosty beverages, so maybe that's why. But I thought this fight... I just thought going into the night, it had no business being on the main card whatsoever.
You said it yesterday sober as well, so.
It had no business. Tim Boach, Josh Simon, we talked about it, but I guess we should talk about it a little bit more. Big win for Tim Boach, man, who basically admitted after the fight, like, listen, I know that my job was on the line. My career was on the line.
He hadn't won since 2014. I checked.
Yeah,
I think so.
It was bad. It was bad. I think he was 2-5 in his last. Josh Simon. We had spent some time around Josh. I mean, obviously Josh is kind of
sweetheart. Everybody loves him.
He's kind of ingrained himself.
I read it on Twitter as well, like that. Media is mostly enamored with Josh Simon, and with good reason. The guy's very eloquent. I'm actually reading his book right now. I'm just starting it, but I should be done with it by tomorrow. And
sounded like a humble brag.
What?
That was a humble brag. I should be finished with this book in a day. Some of us can't finish books in a day. Why are you trying to show your education level?
Yeah, so people have probably assumed because I'm from Brazil that I was raised like in the jungle you know,
you feed carrots to buses or whatever
and stuff. Yeah, so I just wanted to let people know that
she can read a book in a day.
We have schools and stuff in my second language, nonetheless.
Damn it. Damn it. Chael Sonnen, you failed me. You failed me.
We should have him on the road show so we can have an educated conversation.
We should, actually. That'd be a lot of fun. Brazilian history studies with Chael Sonnen and Fernanda Prachis. Oh!
That should be a fun little
This is going to happen. This is totally going to happen.
Make it happen.
All right.
So he's kind of one of those guys that – the media loves, he writes, you know, so I just think we all like had sort of an emotional attachment to someone a little bit there.
I thought his athleticism, though, I mean, you're right. I think we all had an emotional tie,
but other than
it's
that,
hard to dissociate yourself from the emotional tie. That's why we love the sport. I think we have ties to people, but I thought the athleticism, the speed, you know, the youth, I thought he was going to move around. The bottom line is, I just don't think he executed what he was supposed to do. And we talked to him a little bit afterwards, and he's brutally open and honest because, again, he is kind of a part of the MMA media at this point since he writes and stuff. And since there was no media here, there was no press conference, and this was one of those small shows and things happen that you don't normally get to do. I mean, we got to talk to him as he was holding paper towels over his busted-up eye.
Horrible.
And I think
I was talking to him like, try, you know, like pretend you don't see
mold,
it. Pretend you don't
mold,
see it. Focus mold. On the good eye. Focus on the good eye.
Yeah.
And it was tough. It looked so painful. And
I think he's
one of
I
those
think,
moments when you cover this sport, you're like, what am I doing with my life?
Right.
Because it's just so brutal. It looked so bad.
I think he was so disappointed. I just don't think he stuck to his game plan. And only he can answer why.
The strategy was piss poor, though.
But I don't think that was the strategy, to go into the clinch with Tim Boach.
Why? I don't even understand it.
I don't think it was.
He's, you know, he did the same thing with his last fight before that, in which he played it so wrong. And he knew it. He saw it.
Right.
You know, he wasn't playing with his strengths. He was accepting that grappling game too much. And then he goes against the strategy once again and just, you know, has this brain fart moment. That was clearly it. But like you said, congratulations to Boach. I mean, he did have his job on the line, and he has all the credit, and, you know, kudos to him. It's just, I think that's the thing, though. Most media are focusing on Josh, someone lost the fight instead of Team Boach won the fight.
Right. He definitely deserves that respect.
Yeah, he won the fight. He looked great. He destroyed someone's face. So, you know, all the power to him.
Kenta Nakamura picked up a submission win over Kyle Noak.
I had totally forgotten about that fight.
Yeah, you know, 1 second left on the clock to get that finish.
Literally
one second left on the clock. Nakamura, you know, has probably a name that just kind of flies under the radar. Most people don't know. Interesting, though, I talked to him afterwards, and I was like, hey, listen, man, they got the Manila show coming up. Sounds like they're going to be in Australia. You want to fight over there? He's like, nope, I want to fight in Vegas. You know, he's like,
awesome.
I want to fight in Vegas.
There.
And I thought that was cool. And then kind of a wild moment afterwards, he was like wanted to give me respect because he sees me everywhere.
He
it's
asked
awesome.
For, like, for a picture. Yeah. With John, I'm doing the humble bragging here. Let me brush that dirt off your shoulder. I'm such a big deal.
No. It was just funny. It was nice to get that respect. For a fighter to offer that respect was nice. A fighter that decided not to give me respect.
Luis Smolka. God, that was a great moment. So we were both sitting cage side after the fight ended, and briefly, because John was backstage most of the fight. So Smolka walks past. but it was one of his camp guys, right? One of his corner men.
Yeah.
Looks up at John and says, wrong pick. Because we obviously, as you guys probably know, when you guys were listening
to us.
Oh,
Jesus, my picks sucked. I went 2-4.
We do staff picks, right? And This week, coincidentally, John and I had the same picks. I think we'd just be hanging out way too much.
Yeah.
If you were a woman, like, our cycles would be synchronized
at this point.
So we got the same picks for this one. And we both picked Ben. So that was just – and that's one thing. My name just started showing up in the staff picks. I'm sure I'm going to get those little moments, because the fighters actually look at those.
They do, and it's funny because they all say they don't, but they do. We didn't do staff picks for the longest time, and it was actually one of our bosses at USA Today was like, I really think you guys should do this. And this person was absolutely right, because it does get a lot of clicks. People do like to weigh in on it, talk about it, and I think it's kind of fun. We like to fuck with each other a little bit about the picks and all that stuff. So it is kind of fun for us to do. But the bad part about it is that you find out that the fighters do actually look at it. And I've told the story before, but it was really funny because the first time it ever happened was in Macau. And Tyron Woodley finished Dong Young Kim. And I, at the press conference, asked him, because at the time, if you remember, Dana White had been saying, you know, you choke in big – or Tyron Woodley has choked in big situations, and that's why he doesn't deserve a title fight. Now he's got one in a couple of weeks. And he knocked out Dong Young Kim in Macau, and I asked him at the press conference, you know, do you feel like this is, you know, the chance to show that Dana's wrong and that you don't choke in these bad situations? And his answer to me was, I know that you picked wrong. You know, like, you're like, oh, shit. Like, you actually see that stuff. So it is kind of fun. But, you know, you mentioned that a lot of us picked Ben Wynn going into that fight, and I was actually talking to Smolka in his camp afterwards, and
I think it wasn't that uneven. I thought it was uneven. Maybe, yeah, it was pretty even.
Was it? Okay. Because it's funny, because what happens in a lot of these situations is a lot of times we'll all – I mean, it's like more or less a 50-50 fight, but we all kind of lean that one direction. And then we see people say, oh, I can't believe the whole staff thinks this way. It's like – well, no, we may have all been 51-49,
yeah,
and we just all ended up that way. But Lewis Smolka looked incredible. And I'll be honest, I thought it was going to come down to was the fact that Ben, his speed and his striking was going to be too much. And I kind of gave it the intangible factor that here he was fighting his hometown.
True story.
A fight that he begged for.
I said the same thing yesterday.
And that's what I thought. I thought there was going to be that intangible.
And defensively, Smolka has shown – a couple of, you know, breaches that I thought that Ben would be able to capitalize on. And ultimately, when we do picks, it's very rare for us to just point at a fight and go like, this guy.
He's a guy.
You know, so it's one of those things. You sort of like start factoring things. And usually when the other result happens, it's also a scenario that you factored in. And that just makes you go like, why didn't I just stick with that line of thinking?
Well, Smolka has now beaten three guys in their home territory. He fought Wynn here in South Dakota. He fought Vasilik in Australia. He fought Houlihan in Dublin.
Yeah.
He's 4-1 in the UFC right now. All of a sudden, at flyweight, he's a real contender. Especially because, and it's weird to say that because, you know, we have him kind of on the outside, but like when you look at flyweight where Demetrius has literally beat everybody.
Yeah.
I don't think you have to get yourself to number two to be
Wilson
a title contender.
Wilson was 1-1.
Absolutely.
When he got the shot. And the logic, and at first you know, kind of like it looked weird. But then when you looked at it, everybody had already lost to him.
Right.
Or was immediately coming off a loss. So, or wasn't just that well ranked. So it kind of like you understood why Wilson got that.
Yep.
And then now, I don't see him that far, to be honest.
I don't either. I think he's there. I mean,
well, now Wilson is fighting a newcomer, right?
Shorty Rock Santella,
and then Demetrius
Chantella.
Is injured.
Like I said, it was like Shandella Powell or something.
I don't get it.
Frosty beverages.
We're very tired, guys.
We started the week very tired. We're ending the week very tired.
We're zombies today. So, sorry about John there. I'm really sorry. Again, I can't stress how
she
sorry I am.
She can't apologize enough for me on my own
John
podcast.
Okay, I'm really sorry.
Thank you for the guest apologizing for the host.
So, I totally forgot. Okay, so Demetrius is injured. Say Wilson loses that fight.
Yep.
Who's the next contender?
It's a great question. It's a great question. I don't see a reason why Smoker couldn't sneak in there.
You see? That's just how the flyweight division sits now. So so the win for him was, I think, a lot bigger than we all anticipated.
Massive. And it was just so devastating.
Oh, poor Ben. Ben looked destroyed after. I only say the first name because I don't know how to pronounce his last name.
It's Win. It's not that hard. It looks hard, but we just say Win.
I'm sorry. Again, you know, second language?
Oh.
Yeah, we don't have that sound.
It is, yeah, it's pretty
Portuguese.
Tough. I don't think we have that sound. We just make it up. So, preliminary card, wasn't a bad I mean, I think coming into this fight, sometimes there's like a preliminary fight we're like super hyped about. I think the main card was the one we were hyped about. I mean, Sam Alvey picked up a big win. He had lost two fights in a row. I was actually really happy, I'm not going to lie, for Courtney Casey to pick up a win. I had called some of her fights in Tough Enough, and I knew she was a really good athlete.
But Stancio looked horrible.
Stancio is not a good fighter right now. I'm not saying she's not a great person and a great athlete.
Heavy words.
She's just not.
Shots fire.
She's not a fantastic fighter. I mean, Courtney Casey, coming into this, had lost back-to-back split decisions. Joanne Calderwood, Seo Heeham, like two of the best in the world, and she got Stancio, and I think she went in there and showed that, like, listen, maybe I'm not top tier,
but I'm right there
below that, and I think she proved that. So I was happy for Courtney Casey, and I will say this. So backstage, Courtney, she was like, "Oh, hey, good to see you," so we were talking again. No media back there. The quote unquote.
Oh my god! How many times are you gonna say that, John?
Scrum is one person. Well, I need to re-describe it for this situation.
We were very exclusive, guys, in case John hasn't said it enough.
I'm re-describing it so that you remember, because she started crying, and she mentioned in the cage she'd had an emotional year. And I didn't really know what that meant. So I kind of, followed up with her. Like, you mentioned emotional year. Like, what's that about? And she lost two people that she was close to passed away. And I don't know who that is, because I didn't want to – because she started tearing up. And, we sat in a press conference the other day and watched John Jones tear up. And that was hard to watch. And there was like 100 of us in there.
Yeah.
Try standing in front of somebody that starts tearing up when it's just you, and there's nobody else to like ask another question, and there's I felt awful. I felt absolutely awful, and I probably did a shitty job as an interviewer because I was like, "All right, well, thanks, you can go," because I felt.
Do you want a hug?
I felt horrible. I felt horrible.
Oh, poor thing.
I know. Other notes on the prelims. Hani Yahya, I thought. He picked up a big win for him. He wants to fight on that Brasilia card that apparently doesn't exist, but everybody knows to ask for it on September 24th in Brasilia. Why won't they just announce it in your hometown on the week of your birthday? Incredible. Your 30th birthday.
What? Where did that even come from?
Just kidding.
It's my 27th birthday.
Nice. 27th birthday, the week of the fight card in Brasilia. You'll get to celebrate that if the UFC does indeed have a fight in Brasilia on the 24th, which they will. Alex Nicholson beat the local guy, Devin Clark. I thought hilarious. Alex Nicholson, in just two UFC fights, has made himself very memorable. Of course, he was the guy
who proposed.
That's right. And then had his jaw broken in the fight the next night, which couldn't have been a lot of fun.
Yeah, true story.
Misha Serkinov broke his fight. Now, at the weigh-ins on Tuesday, since this was a midweek fight, he tried to hand something to Devin Clark, and I don't think any of us could figure out what it was.
Yeah,
I was like, what the hell is happening?
It seemed like a note or something.
Yeah. What it was four tickets. So Alex Nicholson, that was his assignment of four tickets. Every fighter gets tickets to the card, which they can do whatever they want with them. And he tried to give them to Devin Clark and was like, hey, give this to people so that your friends can come see you get beat. Some swagger.
That's some swagger right there.
You're less impressed than I am. I thought that was next level trash talk, dude. To actually give somebody.
But then it's like we don't see it, and we don't know it's the ticket.
It's because I'm passive aggressive, huh?
Oh yeah, that
it's
could be.
I'm passive aggressive. Yeah, that was a solid passive aggressive move.
Yeah,
right?
I think that's probably it. Why you thought it was so interesting.
He spoke to my inner passive aggressiveness.
You're cut off, John.
This is my second language, by
you're
the way.
You're cut off, John. No more Coors Light.
Sobriety is my second language.
I just think it would have been cooler if we had seen it, you know, because we didn't know it was tickets. The only reason
I'm telling you now, that's the whole point.
Oh God, yeah. So everybody who listens to our podcast will know, but
see, it's great.
What did I get myself into?
All right, that was UFC Fight Night 91.
Hostage by John Moore.
Blink once for. To come get
if
me.
If you're listening, help me. He's gone mad.
I promise.
He's gone mad.
I have gone mad. I will say, we did get to have a little bit of fun, by the way, while we're here. Jesus Christ, we have not been here that long. We have done so much.
Yeah, right? It seems like we've been here for 1,000 days. I feel like a Sufalian.
How about the golf tournament that we got to go to?
Oh, God, I totally forgot about
that. We've got videos that'll be coming out. You guys will all get to see this on MMA Junkie. So Luke Rockhold was actually holding a golf tournament here. I'm assuming they had to know it was the fight card was, but it was literally not in conjunction with the fight at all because they weren't like official guest fighters. It was a fundraising golf tournament, as these charity golf tournaments are. Obviously, we didn't get a chance to speak to Luke Rockhold. Fortunately, we talked to Chris Wade,
who explained
exactly what this thing was, and it was cool. I believe, if I'm not right, that was the first time you had actually ever set foot on a golf course.
Oh yeah, it's not my cup of tea. I'm not fancy like that. Golf in Brazil is like, it's very elitist. It's not something that we all have access to.
Right.
Even my dad, who's sort of snobbish, he doesn't play golf. Like, we'll go as far as playing tennis. I did play tennis for a while.
Right.
That was my snobbish self as a kid. But golf is just not that popular. It's just really restricted to very expensive places and stuff. So I was just not familiar with it. And then, so we got there. And John is, like, speaking this foreign language with the person.
It's called English.
What a dick. Passive aggressive. AF, as the kids would say it. So you're talking to the guy. The little cart had a name, didn't it?
The
little car that we're driving around?
What about it?
Did it have a specific name?
A golf cart.
So it wasn't that. You guys are talking and these guys like started saying weird stuff like numbers and puds and pudding and whatever. And I was just kind of like, I have no idea what's going on. And we drove around in the little golf cart. You drove very recklessly.
But that's the point.
Dude, no, I was carrying all the equipment with the tripod hanging out, like holding the camera. I actually got stuck in the wires and we had to have Gray Maynard let me know that I was about to break her microphone because I was being such a dummy. So,
I'm just going to say this. Michael Chandler, we have a good interview with Michael Chandler. I think he wants to punch Josh Thompson in the face.
He made it very clear.
I think that needs to happen. So I think that's on the horizon.
Ben Henderson is also someone that
he did mention that, so we'll have that as well. But I think Ben Henderson was more just like he's throwing that out there. I think he personally wants to punch Josh Thompson in the face.
I would go as far as saying that there's a feeling that other people share.
That is, I have heard that. I have heard that.
We have heard that.
I will not either confirm nor deny those type of rumors, but there is that feeling out there. John Volante.
Oh God, he was wearing a shirt, so that was nice, and a nice change of pace. We actually poked fun at him yesterday. Because I tweeted something and I showed it to him. He was like, yeah.
John Volante, actually, so we ran into him after the fight. Well, he was great on the course. He gave a great interview, and you'll see
very
that. He wants to
genuine.
Fight He wants to fight Steve Bosse.
And it's hilarious that he want that fight. Like, you just want to brawl and get injured, which is awesome. But it's
right?
He's in the, at that stage in which he's like, I just want to have fun and do fun fights.
And I'm down with that.
And we're all down. We want to watch it. Let's do it.
So so we talked to him. We actually ran into him again after the fights last night, and he actually mentioned to me that on a recent trip to Las Vegas, he had come into the company of another person that may or may not have been of the opposite sex, and they didn't know who he was, and so they Googled him. And the first thing that came up was a headline MMA Junkie that said, John Volante talks twerking and being a gronk. I was like, I'm so sorry, dude. I didn't see it. I was kind of embarrassed by it, but apparently that was the MMA Junkie headline, which – fantastic headline.
It's amazing. That's why I'm asking who wrote it.
I know. We need
genius.
To find out.
Congratulations.
Fantastic
Steph
headline.
Friend, colleague.
All right. 4 days in Sioux Falls are done. Was it even 4 days? I don't know. You've been in the stage for like 2 weeks and it's been a blur. Tennessee, yeah. Vegas.
I think I left Brazil on the 28th, 27th.
It's been a long run.
Wow,
it's been a long run. So, if you're a lover of Fernanda, she's leaving. If you're a hater, she's leaving. So we'll get back to normal. We'll have Cold Coffee back in business next
awesome,
week.
Awesome, by the way.
We do love Cold Coffee. Yeah, I wish she could be here. If there was anything that we could change, it would be the fact that Cold Coffee would be here with us.
Hopefully, I get you both in Brazil for that card that we don't know that's happening.
I think so. If for some reason they happen to have an event in Brazil on September 24th,
that would be awesome.
For which we already have plane tickets and hotels
and
purchased.
And do my birthday edition podcast.
That's what's up.
Yeah, and if you guys want to send me gifts, I'll take it. Peanut butter.
Peanut butter and still waiting on marriage proposals, right?
It's not happened. It has not happened yet. I wonder why. I'm such a catch. I'm clearly a big catch. So I do not understand as I sit here in my Rambo t-shirt.
In a Rambo t-shirt.
With my sideways ponytail.
Sideways ponytail.
With mascara from the night before.
Yep.
Talking face punching. I don't understand. I'm such a catch. Just doesn't
the way
up.
You lay it out there.
Just doesn't add up, John.
It just
it's
doesn't
almost
add up.
Like they saw the state of my room.
Oh.
The Michael Bay movie that
I'm just going to say. I'm just going to say.
John won't even come in. Like, when we're making plans to go, like, for dinner, he would just wait by. He doesn't even want to see what I have going on in there.
I feel messy because my shoes
are over
there. Oh,
come on. You're, like,
there,
you're so insanely neat.
Two empty beer cans over. Oh, they're frosty beverages.
You can't say beer.
No, I can't. try to be nice.
Okay, I think that's enough frosty beverages.
That's
for
enough.
One night.
That's enough. Time for dinner, and we'll send this all out
I'm
to Cold Coffee.
I'm going for a run, like a healthy person.
Going for a run?
I'm going for a run. I told you.
That's insane. I'm not doing that.
See a catch, athletic as well. Wow, wow. How are guys not lining up to give me a green card? I can't even comprehend. America, make America great again. Let's get into that part of the process.
All right, checking levels. Good, good. All right, good to go.
I'm chewing. Ah.
Finish your chewing, young lady. Finish your chewing.
I'm good.
Has chewing been completed?
Yes.
All right, perfect. So we will go now then.